Welcome to Life as a Patient Doctor. I'm your host, Stephanie Moss, navigating life as a patient and a future MD. Walk alongside me as I reflect on the challenges and lessons I've learned undergoing medical school with invisible disabilities. Join me as I interview other doctors, students, and healthcare workers on their own journeys. Listen to their unique stories on how they have balanced their health while caring for others in the health profession. Welcome, everyone. I'm here with Dr. Gupta. Dr. Gupta is a board-certified family physician who completed her undergraduate education at Duke University and her medical degree at University of Florida and residency at Overlook Hospital, Columbia University. She has worked in multiple settings in the past 25 years, including as an assistant professor at the University of Southern California, as a partner physician at Southern Permanent California Medical Group, and as a staff physician at Doctors Media Care in Illinois. In 2018, she learned about the direct primary care model, or DPC, from a colleague and decided to open the first DPC practice in her county. She did not have a patient or a referral base in her town and thus had to build her own DPC practice from the ground up. Dr. Gupta used in-person and social media marketing to successfully fill her DPC practice in 3 years. Through trial and error, she discovered the key steps and value. She has used social media to showcase the strengths and values of DPC and has lectured about DPC to several future physician groups, both virtually and in person. Her goal is to help further the direct primary care movement in Chicago, land, the state of Illinois, and beyond. Dr. Gupta is married to a retinal surgeon, has 2 children, and in her free time enjoys reading, watching foreign films, and studying Spanish. Welcome, Dr. Gupta.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, thank you so much. And I think we met virtually on Instagram, right?
Yes, yes. Love your account. And I just think it's fabulous that Instagram is a place where older doctors and future doctors and medical students can connect and just share the experience of being part of the medical profession. It's something that wasn't around in my day and age, and I think it's a great resource that your generation of doctors has.
I love that. Yeah, it's so interesting how social media has allowed education and networking and allowed different generations of physicians to connect and share knowledge both to each other and to the community. We learned a little bit about the highlights of the names of the programs, but tell me a little bit about your journey. What got you into medicine and to where you are today?
Sure. So I'm a first generation. I was born outside of the US. I'm originally from Guyana, South America, and I moved here when I was in high school. I come from a family of teachers. There is one other physician in my entire extended family on both sides. So I didn't really grow up with medical professionals around. I didn't have a lot of experience, you know, or any exposure to medicine. But when I came here as a high school student, I started to get interested in science. And as luck would have it, as a freshman at Duke, I was able to take a seminar with Professor Brody, who at the time was the president of Duke and is also a practicing psychiatrist. And I had never heard about psychiatry. And I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. But then you're also a physician as well. And I want to do this. And I want to go to medical school and I want to become a psychiatrist. And so that's what inspired me just to even apply to medical school. And then when I got there, I realized that I like other aspects of medicine in addition to psych. So I loved OB, I loved, you know, looking after kids, women's health. And so eventually I settled on family practice because you get to do a bit of everything, but then you also get certainly to do some psychiatry as well.
I love how a psychiatrist has inspired your journey into medicine. That's amazing. I also fell in love with psychiatry, but also fell in love with family medicine just because the body and mind, they're everywhere. I love it.
Absolutely. Okay.
In medical school, you applied to family medicine, I'm sure.
I did. And just the way my journey worked out, I was dating my boyfriend at the time, who is now my husband. And so we ended up doing a couples match. And so everywhere that he applied for ophthalmology, I applied for family practice. And so we ended up training in the Northeast. And then after we finished training, we moved to California, and hence all the different jobs. And my career kind of loosely followed starting a family. And so I sort of switched and swiveled based around what worked for me to continue practicing, but also be the primary parent who is available to our kids. And that's a bit tricky in today's healthcare landscape to find the right position that allows you to do different things. And that's why I was originally a partner physician, then I became a per diem physician, then I became an urgent care doc, and now I'm private practice owner and family doc in my own space.
Wow, that's amazing. Can you talk a little bit about any additional challenges that you faced either during your medical education or post during your journey?
Absolutely. So medical school is, as everybody knows, it's a very challenging experience. The volume of what you have to learn is unlike anything you see or you even imagine. There's just no other way around it. The amount that you have to learn is huge. But what was so interesting is, you know, I'm from an Indian family. We're kind of raised on this whole culture of memorizing and, you know, all that stuff. And so it turned out that I was a pretty good test taker and kind of felt very comfortable in the first 2 years. But then when you transition, as you know, to third and fourth year, everything is different. And that's where you have to think on your feet. You have to, you know, translate what you've learned to what you're seeing in front of you. And it's not always a straight line, right? And so that's where I realized, wow, I am not cut out for fast-paced things, for emergencies. I don't do well under pressure, which is why it was clear to me I could not be in the emergency room. I couldn't be in the ER. I didn't like codes. I hated being the one running a code because, God, what if you forget the right thing and epi and all that? And so that was challenging. It was challenging to sort of realize that you could be good in one sense and strong, but then not as strong in other areas, and that you have to accept that about yourself and, you know, work with what you're able to do and then build up what you're less skilled at in order to be a well-rounded physician.
So how did you come about in the clinical environments, eventually get used to it or find your niche?
I think time is always the best teacher, and med school, although it's slow at the moment, it does eventually finish, right? Days and weeks and rotations pass and you get to the end of it. So as I went further along and you graduate from being the intern to the senior on the team, I became more confident. And then I also realized that we all have certain skills that we bring to the table. And for me, mine is communication. I actually figured out over the years that this had to do with my childhood because I moved around a lot. My dad worked in the Middle East, so we moved through a couple countries in the Middle East. We lived in England, we lived in Jamaica. I moved schools constantly, like every few years. And it was a very disruptive childhood, but it taught me how to connect with people very quickly. What that played out to is it's just very easy. It's just something I've always had to do. So when I'm in a room with a patient or meeting someone for the first time, it just happens. And so I realized that that part of my upbringing was something that made looking after patients in a family medicine setting where you want to build those relationships and then get to know people very comfortable for me. And it kind of offset the areas that were less comfortable, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I very much appreciate that, being able to form that quick rapport with patients, especially in medical environments where maybe it's the first time you ever meet them and you only have a short bit of time, but it's so important to be able to have that skill of communication. I'm so glad you were able to identify that pretty early. Does that by any chance relate to your current model of family medicine and this direct primary care model?
Absolutely. Direct primary care was pretty much just a dream that fell into my lap unexpectedly. Like most of us in just working in medicine, everybody knows it's very busy. It's a high volume type of environment right now. And that's pretty much based on the structure of healthcare, because most of healthcare is run by larger groups. They sort of set the standard for how the financial goals, and then that dictates the volume, right? And so that means that all of us have to keep up with the volume that our employers ask of us. And so it's doable, but it is challenging. And so for me, it was something that mentally was very difficult from the very beginning. I thought maybe it had to do with me. I thought maybe it was my first job, but the theme kind of carried through with everywhere that I worked. And I just thought, can't do things this way. It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right to go this quickly and to have to move this fast with a patient. I want to be here longer. I don't want to be stressing about who's coming next. I don't want to be worrying about falling behind. I want to be in the moment with who I am, right? And I want to enjoy this because I studied so long and I want to look after this person and I don't want to be thinking about time every minute. So when I found out about direct primary care, it just made so much sense because it's a model where you open a small practice where there's no insurance involved. You charge patients a membership fee, and the membership fee is deliberately at a lower price point so that this is something that's affordable for middle class, you know, anybody that is a small business owner. So it's a very simple model that's membership based. A lot of people ask, is direct primary care the same as concierge? And it isn't, because the price point of concierge is much higher and geared towards more of an executive patient, a celebrity type patient. Direct primary care is specifically intended to be affordable and to fill that gap between where patients sometimes can't afford insurance, or insurance has a high deductible and really doesn't cover much. And so the goal is to make primary care very affordable. And the nice side of that is, because you can have a small practice, you can have as much time as you want with your patients. And so for me, that's typically, you know, I book 30 minutes for return patients. I book an hour for new patients, depending how they fall. You know, some people will be 45 minutes. And it's just nice because there's no rushing. I'm not worrying about who's coming after. We have enough time to answer all the questions. And if you can't get everything done in an hour, then it's okay. You can have them come back, because an hour is a lot of time for anybody in healthcare. And so practicing this way has just been joyful, because the pressure of focusing on things other than the patient isn't there. And so my mind and my focus are on the person that I'm with.
I love that. Can you touch a little bit about like your mental health before your DPC practice and after, and if there was a change?
Oh, absolutely. Just night and day. The job I had before my DPC was in an urgent care that was very busy, had a lot of patients who were on pain meds who really wanted to continue that. So there was a lot of, you know, trying to talk them out of that, or giving in, or and then worrying and safety. And so there were a lot of difficult issues in that practice. But that's part and parcel of being a doctor. But the volume, you know, is just what was just wearying. And, you know, do I stay late to finish my notes, or do I bring my notes home? And so having my own practice and also having it be a smaller number of patients, it's just a very uplifting and joyful is the word that keeps coming back to mind. I just look forward to seeing patients. It is not a stress. I don't wake up on, you know, Monday morning and think, oh God, I have to work. I pick my schedule. I pick what days I want to go in. I pick what hours, when I want my appointments. I choose all of that. And we talked about burnout. I think so many of us who've opened direct primary care practices were on the edge of burnout, or were experiencing burnout because of all the things we talked about. And so being able to practice this way, it's just completely different. The side piece that you do have to know is that it's two jobs, because you're the physician and you're also running the business, right? So there's some of that you have to get used to. And you realize that there's, you know, the work in the practice of seeing the patients, but then there's the work of running the practice. You, in some senses, are busier, but you don't feel like you're working more because you enjoy what you're doing, versus when you're just working for someone else and you show up, but you have to see 25, 30 patients and then figure out how to do the notes. Yes, you're not handling the business, but just the patient care part is really draining. At least that was my experience.
In that draining, do you feel also that you struggled? I'm more just thinking in general, when physicians have burnout, they've noticed that empathy also decreases and being able to connect with patients. But you also said that's your strong point. So how did that kind of work when you're balancing something you're good at, you love talking, you love forming those connections, but at the same time, you're mentally and physically exhausted?
What helped me is I was able to work part-time when my kids were younger. So working urgent care 3 days a week is not the same as working 5 or 6 days a week. So having fewer hours and consolidating that time and having more time within the week to just be off definitely gave me, you know, the mental space so that I could recoup enough that when I'm there, I could try to be in the moment. The other thing all of us do, or at least what I used to do, is the charting just had to go by the wayside because you either choose to give your patient the time or you choose to give the charting your time. And so I would just, you know, I would just get the charting done at some other point in time, like I said, at home, or come in early and finish it or whatever you have to do, because then you can maximize the time you give the patient. And that then makes the job more enjoyable, because that's what you really want to do, right? Is you want to have that time with your patients. And that's what I think enables you to keep empathy going. Also, we all have different coping mechanisms in medicine, whether it's just venting to our spouses, to our colleagues, realizing we're all in the same boat. You also have this switch when you become a parent, and even before that, when you become an earner, you also have this responsibility, right, to pay your bills, and you're now a big girl, so you can't, you're not a student anymore, and so you have to have this job because you have to take care of your loans and your home and your other things. And so that's a part of it that you have to just be an adult about it too, and realize that I'm going to be doing this the rest of my life, so I have to find a way to cope with it. Luckily, when you're in the exam room, the last person you want to blame is the patient, because it's not their fault. And so I feel like trying to protect that time and just make the most of that time with the patient is what allows you to continue to be empathetic. And then the rest of it, you just do it on your own time.
That is so helpful. And you provided really great specific ideas for other individuals who either now are struggling with burnout or struggling getting to that point. So thank you for saying those. One of the things that you mentioned is your husband is a physician, and having that as a coping strategy. My husband's also in medicine. So from a personal interest, and also I'm sure there are dual physician households and marriages, do you have any advice or things that have worked or challenges even?
You know, we were really lucky. We met when we were very young, so it was wonderful to share the experience of going through med school together. We did not go to different medical schools on purpose. Just as a side note, I got into his med school and another one, but we hadn't been dating that long and I didn't want to go there and be the girlfriend. So I picked a different med school. We had 4 years of long distance, you know, just because I didn't want to be the girlfriend at his school. We planned to have our residencies together. And so sharing that experience, understanding why the other person is busy, what it means when you have exams, you know, we shared it together. And we also understood, but then also made each other a priority. And when I look back, all I remember about med school is studying, having a few friends, and seeing him, and just making time whenever we could, you know, to get a ride, you know, just because he was 6 hours away to go see him, and vice versa. So that bonding began for us in med school. And then as we, you know, entered the working world, it's really nice to, at least for us, it's been fun to be in different aspects, in different specialties within medicine, because I just can't believe he does the same thing all the time. Like he does the same 5 surgery, which apparently don't get boring because, you know, every patient, the surgery is different. But I'm like, what? You did a vitrectomy again? Right?
Oh my goodness. I'm going to do that either.
just joking. But it's cool to see what's happening within that specialty. And the fact that it's so different means that I'm never bored hearing about what he's doing. And I learn from him. So whenever there's anything remotely to do with ophthalmology, I will text him, call him, or ask him at night, what am I supposed to do? Or what would I do? And then vice versa, because what I'm doing is so different. You know, he'll ask, and sometimes I'll be helping him out with general questions that, you know, perhaps have an impact on what he's doing. Where it got a little challenging was when I became a business owner, because since he's employed by a large group, he very much is in that world of work hard when you're there and leave it all at work when you come home. And in the early years of my practice, I was working at the practice, then I was doing a lot of things in the evening, you know, working on the website and, you know, fitting systems for ordering the pharmacy, like all these things you have to do would spill into the evening. And that's where it got a little strained, because he was like, you know, you're not really around anymore in the evening, you're always working. And so I had to sort of rein that in and keep it out of the family time in the evening and just protect that time so that, you know, nobody would resent the fact that I was running a practice and doing something different.
I completely 100% relate to that, especially as I go off on my little projects like this podcast. It's so important to be like, okay, these are the hours that I'm doing the podcast. These are the hours I'm with him. I like how you said that of family time, work time, even if it's at home, but it's important to have those boundaries even with each other. What we haven't talked about yet is balancing being a mother and being a parent. How does that fit into being also a physician?
I think you just bring it along, and we decided early on we were going to be very hands-on parents. We've always lived in areas where, unfortunately, we didn't have either set of in-laws. So we've never had grandparents around or, you know, family to kind of give us that type of support with our kids. So we've always done everything and certainly have had help, you know, in terms of a housekeeper slash nanny, but we've literally done everything. And so that means that it's more work and less time and space to breathe, but our kids are now teenagers and we also feel that we were there for everything. And that's even with him being a retina surgeon, he was able to be at every soccer game. And then when it became tennis, every tennis match and every, you know, dance recital and things like that. So we've been able to do everything. And then our kids have just always seen medicine. They just have always known, hey, there's going to be rounding on Saturday morning because there were post-ops because there were surgeries on Friday. So dad's going to be gone for an hour and then he'll be back. And then they understand that patients call, that sometimes you step away. And then when I opened my practice, they got to see everything about it. And what was fun is they were both around middle school age. They heard so much about DPC that they can actually pitch DPC to anybody now. If you ask them, what is DPC? No insurance, and it's a monthly membership. And that's
horrible. Love that.
You know, and I think that's what I would, the advice is with every family is different. You figure out your own balance of what you're able to do, what you need help with, what can you afford to outsource, and what are you going to handle yourself? But we always did put family first. We learned over time, again, if we're driving in the car with kids, we're not going to answer a call from a patient. They're in the car. And besides the privacy, it's also pulling your attention away from them. And so anything we're doing, you know, you're not going to answer a call during dinner. It can wait 15 minutes till dinner's done. And that type of thing to protect and prioritize your family, because the work is always going to be there. And rarely is it that type of emergency that you have to drop everything that second, right? So just respecting the priority of how you divide out all the different areas of your life. And I also think trying to just have fun, trying to enjoy it, trying to be grateful, right? Like not everybody gets to be a physician or gets to be a parent or gets to be a spouse. And so they're all great blessings. And so trying to remember that even when it gets a little crazy just tells you, hey, just take a step back. It's all going to get done. There's always a way. There's always a way.
Amazing. I was going to ask you for more advice. You've provided so much advice, thoughts, and strategies. Before that, I wanted to ask you, earlier you mentioned being able to cut down to part-time, and that seems like a common theme that individuals want to try to get, whether it's because they have a family or they have a mental illness or a physical illness or disabilities. However, it's not always accessible, or there seems to be challenges to be able to go part-time. Did you notice that? Do you have any advice for individuals who are looking to go part-time in their medical career?
I think you have to just look and look and look and look. And this is the same advice that I would also say just in terms of choosing your specialty, deciding to go into medicine in the first place, is just ask and ask and ask and ask as much as you can. When it comes to part-time, I wish I could say that it's something readily and easily available, because to me, it seems to be a no-brainer that when we start families, not everybody can keep up a 40-hour work week. And so why can't we just divide jobs in half and have two people doing one person's job? But companies don't want to do that, because then how are they splitting the benefits and all these other things they come up with? So as obvious as it seems to me, when you look at the work, the physician workforce, it hasn't translated into the corporate landscape. And if anything, unfortunately, it's become harder to find part-time jobs as the years have gone on. And so that's where more physicians returning to private practice and independent practice opens that space up again, because then you can decide, hey, two of us are going to open a dermatology practice and then we're going to split everything, or I want to be the main one and you're going to be the second one. And same with, you know, a DPC, because when you combine things, then you get to split the overhead, right? And that also helps expenses for everybody. So I think scope for part-time exists in private practice now, but less so in corporate practices from what I've seen. I'm always hopeful that the powers that be will realize how important it is to have physicians of all different backgrounds, and that includes women, right? Because we're at least 50% of the physician workforce. But in reality, after practice, I think we're less than that, because many of us end up taking time off to have our kids and raise them, because there aren't part-time options. It's either all in or all out. And so I'm hopeful that if other companies and the larger groups can kind of see, hey, if we are a little flexible, we can keep more women. And then that way we can diversify the physician workforce that we offer to our patients. We're not only offering men of a certain age, or, you know, women of a certain, or whatever, based around them only wanting to work the 40-hour work week, if that makes sense.
Oh, completely. You mentioned such an important aspect of how diversity is so important, all aspects of diversity. And that includes gender, that includes individuals of different ages and abilities. And the amount of hours and the scheduling is another barrier in medicine that a lot of people face.
Absolutely.
An interesting additional aspect and barrier that is placed in medicine. To finish off, I always ask for any last tidbits or advice to finish off.
Well, I love that your podcast is approaching medicine from a unique angle. And I know one of the questions that you asked me that we didn't fully get to answer, I wanted to answer, which was about breaking stereotypes. Yes. And diversity, right, within medicine. And I really think that that is so important from two angles. I think on the one hand, everyone who wants to study this field deserves to have a chance to do it. It really should just be about whether you want to invest your time into this work and your life into this work. It should not be about whether you come from a financially stronger background, a family of physicians or not, from a less advantaged background, like that shouldn't be part of it. It should be that you want to be in this field because you want to do this work and you want to dedicate your life to it because you really want to look after people using this knowledge that takes so many years to learn, and you want to put it where it's supposed to be. And I think anybody who wants to do that should have the opportunity, and it shouldn't be this hard and based around all the factors that make it difficult, as you know. And I also think that when it comes to patients, patients are looking for so many things. They are looking for a doctor who is like them in whatever way, whether, as you mentioned, it's a disability, whether it is gender, whether it is cultural background, nationality. They're drawn to their physician for multiple reasons. And sometimes it has to do with that, and sometimes it actually doesn't. But I think patients need to have the opportunity to find who they're going to be comfortable with. And the stereotype that we all know of just has to be broadened so that we're seeing more representation within the field. And so I love that you're discussing it on this podcast, and I hope that it'll be inspiration. Show other young future doctors that, you know, they should just go for it. Just go for it.
Thank you, Dr. Gupta. That was really helpful and inspiring. And it's definitely something that needs, I love that it's a little bit of this generation, a little bit of the previous, that we're working towards having more diversity, more equity, and sharing the stories of not typical status quo, like you said. We are all human, and we all bring our own backgrounds and our own journeys into medicine, and that is a positive thing that allows us to connect more with patients and being able to provide the best care that we possibly can. And it's really interesting to see how everyone's individual experience. For you, you mentioned growing up from being an international, being a first generation physician, going to different countries and learning how to communicate and finding that that was where you wanted to spend the time, and the business of medicine wasn't going to prevent you from being able to do and provide the care that you know that individuals deserve and that you're passionate about. And that is something that I want in the future for me to be able to do that. And I know that a lot of other students still have that hope, even if it's maybe not always possible, but the hope that's what we can one day provide. I wanted to first thank you so much for joining me. It's been a huge pleasure to hear your story. I want to also thank the followers and people that joined in, whether if this is the first time you've listened to the podcast or you've been following along since the beginning, which is only a month ago. It's not too long, but it's been amazing already. All the stories we've been hearing from medical students, from healthcare professionals, and then going through my own journey as both a patient and bringing in my different diversities into patient care as a future doctor. If you would like to learn more, please check out my website at medpsychmoss.com. You can follow me on social media. And also, I want to let Dr. Gupta also share her social media tags and how you can get more information from her. I'll put that down below, but would you like to also say how people can get in contact with you?
Sure, absolutely. So my Instagram account is at dr.aliyagupta. So that's my name, AlieaGupta. And my account on TikTok is exactly the same, at dr.aliyagupta. And I am so, so appreciative of you for having me here today. It is wonderful to see what you're bringing to this space. And I look forward to hearing more from you and your guests and continuing this conversation about how we can uplift the profession. And so thanks again for having me. Really enjoyed being on the show with you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gupta. And I look forward to continue watching your journey on social media too, and hopefully collaborating again in the future as a physician. Thank you, everyone. And get ready for the next episode, where we're going to be continuing on my personal journey through medical school coming up. So stay tuned.